Welcome to Grow Your Influence, leadership conversations for business owners and managers. Whether you own a business and have a team, or leadership is part of your role, welcome, you're exactly where you need to be. Join co-hosts Juliette Robinson and Christy Lee Billett for their regular conversations on all things leadership. No corporate jargon, no textbook ideologies, just real life experience unpacked in a relaxed way to help you be your best boss and lead your team with confidence, clarity, and control. This is Grow Your Influence. Let's dive in.
Hi, welcome back to the Grow Your Influence podcast. I'm Juliette Robinson. Today we've got the second part of my interview with David Gillespie, the researcher, author, reformed lawyer, talking about his new book, Toxic at Work, and about the impact of toxic people. In the last episode, we tackled the first two questions in his book, what's wrong with this person and why are they doing this to me? If you haven't had a chance to listen to that, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to that first, because this part of the conversation tackles the second two questions in his book, which are, how do I make it stop and how do I avoid it ever happening again? So this is really about how we deal with these people in our workplace, whether we're leading them, working with them, working for them, having to deal with them. I think there's so much we can take from this. As with the last episode, we'll put the links to David's site and all the details about his book in the notes. So I hope you enjoy this. I hope if you've listened to the first episode that this will really pull things together for you and give you some strategies for dealing with these psychopaths if you have any in your life, but also enable you to recognize and lead them should they appear in your team. And I think that's a really important part of our role as leaders, is to manage these situations. And as David said, if you recognize somebody who has these characteristics, to not put them in charge of people is going to be a really critical aspect of managing them. And there are other ways we can do that. So have a listen to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, we'd love you to rate or review it on whatever platform you use. And feel free to share it with anybody you think might find it useful. Okay, let's talk about the next question you raise then. How do I make it stop? And I think reading the case study in your book was horrifying, but probably horrifying because I recognized some of those people and some of those scenarios that were played out there.
I it was a real departure from me to write that. So that's the first fiction I've ever written in my life. And now that I've done it, I've gotten quite a taste for it. You know, I didn't realize there was a kind of writing where you could just make stuff up.
But you're making it up based on things you've heard and seen, presumably.
Yeah. What that scenario is there for is one of the difficulties people have, because we default to trust, is believing that this is occurring. As I said, there's a tendency for us to try and justify it, or, you know, blame ourselves, or think we're making a mistake and all of that sort of thing. And what I thought we needed to do was have a scenario where you could be various characters in the same scenario. And so that's what that book does. There are four different characters. The story is told through each of those four people's eyes as they go through exactly the same set of facts. And one of those people is a psychopath. The other three are distinct characters that tend to come up in and around psychopaths. So there's their victims, there's their boss, there's their boss's boss. And what I wanted people to do is live that and recognize themselves in one of those characters. And I think almost universally people do. And it's having the impact I want, which is having people understand how subtle this is, and how they cannot ignore the signs of it. Because the consequences in that scenario are pretty dire, but they're not unusual. And one of the things that I really wanted to communicate with that scenario is there's a desire in all of us, when we discover that we are working with a psychopath or working for a psychopath, to believe in karma. It just is that we think to ourselves, they'll get theirs. It'll come around and get them. But the reality, as you see from case study after case study in that book, is it just doesn't happen. They don't get, karma doesn't hit them. If it does, it's an unusual circumstance. So you can't base your reaction and the way you run your life in the fervent hope that something else will fix this.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that came through. I was interested in the character of Scott, I think, whose father sort of coached him about how to manage this. And I love that analogy of like it's like being in the room with a Rottweiler.
Yes.
Or being in the yard with a Rottweiler. And you realize what's happening, or you can't tame the Rottweiler. You need to just back out as carefully and quietly as you can whilst, you know, managing your career and managing what happens to you, and sort of get the hell out of there over the fence.
But most of us don't do that.
No.
Most of us do the opposite. Most of us, when faced with the psychopath, think we can either talk them out of being a psychopath, which is never going to happen, and put them on the straight and narrow. And no matter how much they might nod their head or agree with you or what, they're not going to change anything about what they're doing. You've just given them some ammunition to use against you, which is a misguided belief that they can be talked out of it. So that's one thing a lot of people do. The other thing people think they can do is go round the psychopath and report them to their superiors or HR or something like that. And that always ends badly. That's the equivalent of when you're confronted with the growling Rottweiler, thinking to yourself, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to walk past this Rottweiler and I'm going to talk to his owner about this unnecessary growling. The owner is going to believe the Rottweiler, and the business bosses are going to believe the psychopath, because the psychopath has spent most of their time to that point convincing them that if anyone ever complains about them, the person complaining is the problem.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the dangerous thing. And I think too, for most people, it's where is that line? You know, the psychopath might do something and we sort of forgive it and we try to make amends or we take it on ourselves. And it's sort of, I think, recognizing where the boundary is, isn't it? And calling it as a psychopath and not continuing down that path of trying to mediate or fix things or help them, or, you know, that's.
You can't. There's none of that. As soon as a person behaves dishonestly and selfishly, people are dishonest for all kinds of reasons, but if there is a clear benefit to the person in that dishonesty and they do it, you are not mistaken. They have done that. They will continue to do it. What you have seen is the least of what they are doing. Mm. You cannot change them. And alerting them that you are onto them is just making you a target. That's the equivalent of standing there with the Rottweiler and throwing rocks at it. It's not likely to end well for you.
Yeah. I think in your examples in the book, because we talk about building trust in teams all the time, and there's that predictive trust about, you know, doing what you say you'll do. And then there's that vulnerability-based trust about sort of sharing things with the rest of your team around, you know, I don't know the answer, or I need a bit of help, or I'm not sure what I'm doing. And
if you have any suspicions that a person in your team is a psychopath, do not share anything with them. It is, and as much as that is counterproductive to the mission of the team or the mission of the organization, that's not your concern. Your concern is your own personal welfare. The organization has to deal with the psychopath. You on your own cannot.
Yeah. Okay. And so this question about how do I make it stop? You're not going to stop it.
If you're under the psychopath, you're not going to stop it.
No.
If you're above the psychopath, you can stop it.
Let's talk about strategies for that.
Yeah. So first of all, the hardest bit, and this is the hardest bit by miles, and it's the bit most organizations fail at, you have to identify it. You have to know that you have a psychopath in your organization. And that's going to be really, really hard because to people above them, psychopaths are constantly play acting the perfect employee. They will have a million excuses for things that are going wrong below them, and none of them will be about them. The first thing you've got to do if you're above a psychopath is be able or have a mechanism in your organization where people can give you feedback from below the psychopath and not be concerned that they will be victimized as a result of it. But there are also things, even before you get to that point, where you can get a sense that it's going on. One of the earliest lead indicators of a psychopath in a business is a sudden increase in sick leave. If you have an organization that's trundling along 5 to 10% sick leave, and then suddenly it's at 40%, then you've got a problem. Somewhere in that organization is a psychopath. So you start getting absenteeism, you start getting sick leave, you start getting massive staff turnover. So
Leaving.
everyone's CV is on the street. People are leaving. Anyone who can get a job somewhere else is getting a job somewhere else. Now, oftentimes when an organizer, if an organization even notices that, and sadly there are many organizations who don't,
Yes. Well, and they're lag indicators, aren't they? It's already happening by
It's
the
already
time you leave.
happening, but as soon as it starts to happen, if you're a good organization, you'll notice it happening. What should then be a red flag to you is there is a psychopath in this mix somewhere. If you go to that manager and say, "What's going on? Your team is suddenly taking sick leave left, right, and center," they'll do exactly what the psychopath did in the scenario I gave, which is they'll have a story ready to roll about why it's somebody else in that team's problem, why another person is causing this issue. And you will waste valuable cycles chasing that down and persecuting that person. And the psychopath just diverted you around it. So be aware of that. But the other thing to do is, and this is the example I think I used at the end of the book about Costco, how they built a huge organization that worked on the presumption that they were employing psychopaths, and designed a fundamental capability into the organization, which is that every floor person in that organization could speak to the CEO at any time. And they knew they'd have an opportunity because he visited every store.
Well, that's right. I think that's what struck me was it wasn't just words, which it often is. And my door is always open and all that sort of thing. But they actually went out on the floor and made themselves available for those conversations.
And every single manager in that organization knew that if they didn't deal with a complaint or an issue that was happening in their team, there's a very good chance that their boss or their boss's boss or their boss's boss's boss might be able to be directly approached and believed about that. And that's a critical component to building an organization to psychopath proof it.
Yes, because once they're in, I think it's incredibly difficult to deal with that if you're not aware, until things, till people are leaving and things are starting to fall apart.
Yeah, but you've also got to accept the reality that once, I mean, you might come to the conclusion, oh, look, I know Fred is a psychopath, but if you design the workplace to take account of that, like you might say, well, look, I actually don't want to lose Fred because even though he is a psychopath, he is really valuable to this organization because he has this, that, or the other skill. But I have to accept that he has an inability to work safely with other people. So don't have him in charge of other people, is the simple answer to that. We do lots of other things to design around, people's special capabilities or lack of capability, and this should be no different. It's not so rare that we're never going to encounter one. We are going to
Absolutely,
encounter
yes.
them, and we have to make sure we know how to design around them.
And I think part of that, I often talk with teams about this idea that just because you're a brilliant engineer or IT person or whatever, doesn't mean you want to run a team anyway. So having career progression that's not around just leadership of people, but being able to promote people based on their technical specialization can help corral a psychopath as well.
And what you've got to remember, and this is not to provide any kind of an excuse for a psychopath, but what you've got to remember is if you know that a person is a psychopath, remember what Mendota did. They knew that all of their inmates were psychopaths. Don't design a system that operates on punishment as a motivating force. Design a system that operates on reward as a motivating force. Then, and as long as you align the rewards to them with what you want them to achieve for the organization, then all good, because you're going in with your eyes open. The difficulty comes when the reward system is out of whack with what the organization needs.
Okay, let's on that last question, how do I avoid it ever happening again? So we've talked about sort of managing once we have psychopaths in the organization. You have some ideas though about actually
How to
preventing
stop
getting
employing
in.
them in the, yeah,
Exactly, yes.
don't employ them in the first place. The difficulty is they're very employable. So when you interview a psychopath, they're the most perfect candidate you have ever encountered in your entire life. And there's a very simple reason for that. They lie all the time. So their CV is a work of fiction. Everything they're saying to you is what you want to hear. They've spent their whole life having to overcome the fact that they don't have automatic sense of your emotions. So they are finely honed at reading you. And they do read you and they give you back exactly what you want to hear. So when you interview a psychopath, they are magnificent. You will come away thinking that is the most perfect person for this job. I've interviewed a bunch of duds. This guy is 10 plus, absolutely perfect. I don't even need to ring his referees. I don't want to hear anything negative about this guy. He is perfect. And that's how they get into organizations. The defense against that is have processes and use them. Thoroughly check everything on a resume. Thoroughly check every gap in a resume, because that's the other way, is there's just mysterious gaps of 6 months or a year or something that are just completely unexplained or just fudged over. The resume doesn't have the month they started, it just has the year they started. And maybe there's from January to December of that year where who knows what was going on. Be thorough, follow a process, check everything. Talk to every referee and talk to people who have worked for them, not just people they have worked for.
Yes, and I think that's an interesting one because I think we tend not to do that. If, as you say, they've been the perfect candidate in the interview, it's very easy to not worry too much about all the rest of it because we feel like, oh, they're going to be a great fit with the
Particularly if the
team.
resume is pretty good anyway. Like, I mean, remember, it's fiction. And to most HR professionals and business owners, that's hard to believe. Most people work on the basis that what's on a resume is pretty much true. Most
Well,
of
who
us,
would dare to put lies on there?
yeah, make up degrees, make up employers, all of that sort of thing. We work on the presumption, even if it's probably not 100%, we accept that people are fudging their resumes a bit, making it in the best possible light, but we're not accepting that it's full of outright lies. But a psychopath has no problems putting outright lies on their resume because they don't fear consequences. The reason the rest of us don't do it is we do fear consequences. We're like the guy strapped into the chair with the thing counting down to the electrical shock. We get anxious about lying and about things that will happen in the future. And a psychopath experiences none of that. They know the electric shock's coming. They don't care. They know there might be consequences for lying on their resume. They don't care.
I think I read at the beginning of Taming Toxic People that you experienced working with a psychopath.
Oh, at least one. It's not a, and look, I think most of the people listening to this will be able to name at least one that they have worked with, probably that they're working with now. It's not a rare thing. And we'll have all kinds of names for them: workplace bully, micromanager, nasty person, sociopath, narcissist, you name it. But they're all the same thing. They're a person who is extremely selfish, is probably the easiest way to put it, and doesn't care at all about your welfare. You're just an instrument to be used to an end. And if someone listening to this is sitting there thinking to themselves, you know what, I've never encountered anyone like that. Well, guess who's the psychopath?
Well, I think that was going to be my last question was, what if you are the psychopath? What if reading your book, listening to this, you're thinking, oh, that could be me?
No, psychopaths don't have that thought.
They're not going to engage with them that way. No, okay.
No, psychopaths know they're psychopaths. They might not have a label for it. They might not have called themselves a psychopath, but they know they think very differently to everybody else. They know that everybody else has this weird emotional connection with each other that appears to make them weak and vulnerable and can be exploited. And they've known that since they were a very small child. Ever since they've interacted with other humans, they've known that. And they know they're different. And they've also known that they have to pretend to be like the rest of us or else they'll be cast out from society.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And they don't really care about that because, well, they don't care about the being a psychopath.
No. Well, they see it as a strength.
Yes, right, because it gets them ahead.
Well, they see you and I as being weakened by this need to consider the needs of others. Mm. They see that as that's just a weird, strange weakness. Why would anyone do that? You know, the only thing anyone ever needs to consider is what's good for me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh, it's a bit depressing, isn't it? And it is, I think, reading your book, I think what I took away was this sense of looking around at people and, you know, you're thinking about the people you're working with, and I work with teams all the time, and I've now got this extra lens on when people who are highly analytical sort of say, oh, don't make me kind of have team meetings and things. You know, my next sense is, oh, okay, what else do I need to listen for here?
Yeah, and like I said, it's not necessarily a bad thing being able to identify it, because they're there anyway, and it's better to be forearmed and design the system around that reality than living in a fairy tale that assumes everyone's working the same way you are.
And look, I think the reality you're talking about, the designing an organization that has that level of communication and transparency and honesty, is a really positive thing anyway.
Well, we know it is. It's been measured. So I go through in some detail in the book a terrific long-term study that was done on US organizations where they interviewed the leaders of around 200 organizations and concluded which ones were psychopathic or non-psychopathic.
Yeah.
The ones that were non-psychopathic, which, by the way, were a significant minority, but one of them was Costco. That those companies outperformed all of the others by a significant margin, and the ones that were led by clear psychopaths seriously underperformed. And there are good reasons for that, which is going back to where we started, which is when we group together to achieve something, we can only achieve more than the sum of the parts if we trust each other. And with a psychopath running the show, that's impossible.
Mm. And unless you're James Bond, it's not going to work.
Well, yeah, James is a psychopath, of course. But
I did love that psychopath test applied to James Bond. I thought that was...
Well, he's clearly a psychopath, but so is Scarlett O'Hara for some of the older members of the audience.
I never liked Gone with the Wind because I thought she was such an unlikable character. So I felt better reading that.
Well, and the author of Gone with the Wind was so mystified by everyone falling in love with Scarlett O'Hara at the time because she'd written her as a psychopath, and so was really quite surprised and was really quite chuffed when when Cleckley, who wrote the first book about psychopaths, clearly nailed her as a psychopath.
but I think it comes back to your initial point about the fact that we all assume best intent, or we tend to. So we're trying to make her a better person than she is.
Yeah, but the interesting thing about Gone with the Wind, and this is not a movie review, but Rhett Butler knew from the get-go, right the first moment he met her, he knew she was a psychopath. But he worked on the basis of, I know you're a psychopath, but I get something out of this too.
Yes.
And when it didn't suit him anymore, he left.
Yes. Yes, which doesn't make him the baddie.
No.
Look, David, thank you so much. What a pleasure to talk with you. I feel like there's so much more to talk about in terms of all of this. And one day I'm going to get you back on to talk about the brain because I've just finished that book too.
Oh, brain reset. Yes. Okay.
Brain Reset, it's fantastic. And it just makes me feel there's so much we need to communicate about that. And I think as leaders, there's so much we can use from that, helping our teams and things as much as helping ourselves.
I think it's vital to understand how the machinery works, rather than just the narratives we choose to tell ourselves about how it works.
I agree.
It's yeah, I think it's an eye-opening book and an insight into the way the stuff we walk around inside our head and how it works.
And I think the more we can understand that, as I say to people, you can't unknow things.
No,
Once we
that's
know
right.
them, we get to choose what we do with that. We can ignore that knowledge or we
It
can do
also
something with it.
makes things more predictable. I mean, part of the reason you want to identify psychopaths is not for the salacious joy of identifying psychopaths, but just because, okay, that's a person with that particular disability, and I can now predict the way they will respond. And that's one of the most off-putting things about psychopaths is that we find them highly unpredictable because they're not responding the way we would respond. But once you know what you're dealing with, you can plan for it.
Yes, and I think that as if you're running a team, leading a team, or running a business, I think that's the thing that can help is being able to manage that
Yeah,
situation. Yeah.
absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Been an absolute pleasure.
Hopefully we will speak again. And
Of course.
yes, and I've been spruiking your book wherever I can because I do. I love it. I love both your books about toxic people. I think they're incredibly valuable contributions to this conversation about leadership. Thank you.
Thanks, Juliet.
Thanks for joining us on this episode. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating, comment, and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to recommend us to a friend. We also love hearing suggestions for topics or guest speakers that you would love to hear from. The best way to reach us to give us those suggestions is over on our Facebook page. Simply head to Facebook and search Grow Your Influence. See you there.